Hare Krishna. A very warm welcome to everyone for this four-part seminar on the sacred rivers of India. In one of his purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in connection with Queen Kunti's prayers, Srila Prabhupada mentions that human prosperity flourishes by the gifts of nature and not by gigantic industrial enterprises. What a profound statement. And for those devotees who are interested in environmental protection and so on, there are so many such very, very inspiring insights. Yes, indeed, it is a fact. Nature's gifts are bountiful. If only we knew their value and were able to protect them and utilize them for the well-being of everybody in the world. Rivers are amongst the great gifts of nature. Who can not experience a feeling of thrill whilst being on the banks of a river, especially one where the water is flowing vigorously? There is something extremely charming about rivers. Rivers, after all, are large streams of naturally flowing water. And there are rivers everywhere, all over the world. So a little bit of revision of your high school geography, okay? See, in Krishna consciousness, we learn everything. Mathematics, geography, history, everything comes in there. Now remember all the rivers that you studied in school. South America, you had the Amazon. In North America, you had the Mississippi. I'm just pointing out the really prominent ones. In Africa, you had the Nile and the Congo River. In China, there was the Huang Ho and the Yangtze Kiang. And so many such mighty rivers all over. And we see, and also we had the Tigris and the Euphrates in Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq and Iran. And we see that civilizations grew up on the banks of rivers, historically speaking. Because without water you can't live. Water is life. Water is needed for everything. Srila Prabhupada in his purport cites Chanakya Pandit's statement that one should not live in a place where there is no temple, where there is no friend, and where there is no river. So all of you living in London are fortunate, at least there's Thames here. Although one can't call it a mighty river, but it's a river. So okay, you're following Chanakya Pandit's advice. So you're living in a place where a river flows. And we see that happening everywhere. Whether it was along the Nile, great civilizations developed in China, in Egypt, in India. Of course, in India, we have so many mighty rivers and sacred ones. And since we are here in Europe, we have the Volga River, the Danube, and so many other rivers, and here the Thames. So these rivers, they're actually the backbone of human civilization. And they have very enormous significance because they offered, firstly, the largest source of fresh water for drinking. Do you know that 96 to 97% of the water on the surface of the earth is in the oceans and therefore not potable, which means we can't drink it because it's saline, it's salty. And you can't drink that water. There are some lakes that have fresh water, but rivers constitute the primary source of fresh water for the residents of the Earth planet. And they are the biggest source of livelihood for everyone. Without rivers, there could be no life. It wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that. So fresh drinking water, yes. Also, agriculture. Can you imagine agriculture without rivers? When rivers flow down from the mountains, then they carry along with them a lot of silt and the sediment. They deposit that sediment on their banks. And these banks then become very fertile with this rich topsoil that has been washed down from the higher regions. The higher regions get denuded, as we'll see in some pictures ahead. But the lower regions get benefited. And there's so much fertile soil everywhere. And this water then also percolates into the ground. There's groundwater. The groundwater also then feeds the river. So this river then really becomes a source of irrigation and provides fertile soil for humanity. Also, the rivers present a very beautiful ecosystem for varieties of life, be they aquatic forms of life or plant forms of life, and even for human beings. These are essential for survival. They are an important part of the food chain. Again, I take you back to your school science and geography lessons. The food chain is, you have a primary consumer, a primary is one who, a producer like a plant that produces its own food through photosynthesis and so on. And there are other living entities that eat that. And then other living entities eat those living entities. And there's a cycle that goes on, a food cycle. So the rivers are a very vital part of this food chain. They're also a very vital part of the water cycle. The water cycle is that in which the water moves on the land into the sky and back on the land. You see, the seas are all filled with salty water, so they're of no use to us as far as drinking and agriculture is concerned. But the rivers, as they bring in water into the sea, the sun evaporates the water, it gets vaporized, goes up as clouds, the clouds are moved by the wind, and then the clouds pour rainfall all over, sometimes in the sea, sometimes on the land. And then the rivers get charged again. The sources of the river, like the glaciers and the lakes and streams, get charged. The groundwater gets charged, which feeds the rivers. And then again the rivers flow. So what comes down from the clouds is fresh water. It's a massive desalination plant of nature. In the Middle Eastern countries, you know, they have huge desalination plants, which means you have these factories of plants that take the salt out of the water so that you can drink it. That's not very healthy, actually. Natural fresh water, as done by nature, is the best. So here you have nature's gigantic desalination plant, the clouds. So they absorb the sun and the cloud together. And then the food cycle, the water cycle goes on like that. And there are lakes and ponds and groundwater. There are many elements in this. But the rivers, they form a very vital chain in this whole thing. There's also transportation. There is energy that can be generated from the rivers. And as I said earlier, when you sit on the banks of the river, you lose count of time. It is so beautiful and so soothing. It's so much in the mode of goodness. You can just sit there for hours and hours. Of course, if you're chanting, it's all the better. So it's very conducive for developing the mode of goodness. There is something about water, unless it's very enraged, like in a storm or a flood. then water is terrifying. But otherwise, in a river that's flowing by, and to just sit and watch is very soothing, very calming. It's a very beautiful sight. And that is why, historically, we see that sages have used rivers, to the banks of rivers, to build their hermitages and monasteries and cottages and so on. And they live in solitude in some part on the bank of the river. So all these are the different benefits of rivers. And the final and most important benefit from our point of view is the spiritual and religious significance of rivers. Now, all of the above mentioned factors are important because we need to survive even if we are interested in spiritual life. But at the end of the day, spiritual perfection is the goal of our life. And these rivers, they give us that. Maybe not all rivers. Even though there is a sense of upliftment and buoyancy when you see the river, but it may be just a sense of a neutral sense of appreciation of nature. But there are certain rivers which are very sacred. And you can actually make spiritual advancement by coming in contact with these rivers. Not only can you get all the other benefits that I mentioned earlier, but you can get also this extra benefit that is perhaps not obtainable in many other rivers. These are the rivers of India. By the rivers of India, I do not mean the political boundaries of modern-day India. I mean the civilizational or religious or spiritual India, which encompasses not only the current political India, but also what is today known as Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nepal, Bhutan, Sikkim, and Tibet, Bangladesh. You know, this whole area was earlier part of the larger subcontinent. And you have these mighty rivers and these pure sacred rivers flowing here. You can see some of them in this map. The Indus to your left on the western side, which has so many tributaries. They come in from the Himalayas and they flow in. You can see their flow and they go towards the sea. You have the Ganga, you have the Yamuna, and so many tributaries there. Do you know the difference between a tributary and a distributary? School geography. See, so much benefit in coming to the temple. You learn all sorts of subjects. So a tributary is a river that joins another river. A distributary is a river that branches off from a river. Okay, so the water flows out from the river and it forms another branch that flows out, whereas a tributary is one that comes in and joins the main river. So there is a whole network of these rivers. It's called a river system. So you have the Ganga river system, which includes Yamuna and all the other tributaries that are around it. You have the Indus river system. And they form huge networks. The list of sacred rivers is quite long, actually. In India, these rivers are considered sacred and therefore for all sorts of worship and religious ceremonies and even for spiritual purposes, we invoke the presence of these rivers. How many of you have heard of this verse? Those of you who do deity worship, you must know it. And those of you who don't do deity worship, also, you can use it for your home worship and also for invoking the presence of the holy rivers. For example, you apply tilak to your body. So the water that you use to apply tilak should be pure water. So by pure, I don't mean only materially pure, but even spiritually pure. So when you place that in a small vessel, then you can place your thumb of your right hand on it. Don't touch your nails to it. Don't touch the forefinger to it. And then chant this mantra, in which we invoke the presence of these seven holy rivers. Jalesmin sannidhim kuru, which means that may the rivers, may the waters of these seven rivers, they come here into this vessel, whatever it is that we are trying to purify. Gange cha yamune chaiva, Godavari Saraswati, Narmade Sindhu Kaveri, Jalesmin Sannidhim Kuru. So this is the mantra. So everybody can try to remember or memorize this mantra. How many of you apply tilak every day? So everyone who applies tilak should learn this mantra. And even if you don't apply tilak, you can start applying tilak. And therefore it's always good to learn this mantra. And even for other purposes, if you want Ganga jal, Ganga water, Yamuna water, just chant the mantra. In the purport, in one of his purports in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada says, many sages, including Shankaracharya, have composed prayers in praise of the Ganges, and the land of India itself has become glorious because such rivers as the Ganges, Yamuna, Godavari, Kaveri, Krishna, and Narmada flow there. Anyone living on the land adjacent to these rivers is naturally advanced in spiritual consciousness. Somehow or the other, India is called Punyabhumi. It's the land of piety. It's the land of spirituality. And everything there that naturally occurs, there is some piety to it. And there is some impetus to spiritual life when one associates with these lakes and these rivers and the mountains, the forests. So Prabhupada mentions here that the land of India has become glorious because of such rivers, holy rivers, and also because of other holy places like Vrindavan, Mayapur, Puri, and many, many other holy places, plus holy mountains, holy forests. Nature in all its beauty and bounty, you know, is sacred and holy, especially in the land of India. And here's a rather long verse. It's two verses actually, from the fifth canto, in which there's a long list of rivers. So we won't read it out, but you can see some of the names. Perhaps you may recognize the Brahmaputra, or you may recognize the let's say Tungabhadra, and Mahanadi, Saraswati, Yamuna, Mandakini. So some names you may recognize. So the second verse says, the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha are purified because they always remember these rivers. Sometimes they chant the names of these rivers as mantras, and sometimes they go directly to the rivers to touch them and bathe in them. Thus the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha become purified. Again, another purport. All these rivers are transcendental. Therefore, one can be purified by remembering them, touching them, or bathing in them. This practice is still going on. Again, another purport of Srila Prabhupada. India has many sacred rivers, such as the Ganges, Yamuna, Narmada, Kaveri, and Krishna. And simply by bathing in these rivers, people are liberated and become Krishna conscious. That isn't said so much about the Danube or the Amazon, something. Not that we should disrespect these rivers, but there's something special about these rivers like Ganga, Yamuna, Narmada, Kaveri, etc. Another interesting thing. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, chapter 15, text 134, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his brother Vidya Vachaspati. And he says here, in this age of Kali, Krishna is manifest in two forms, wood and water. Thus, by enabling the conditioned souls to see the wood and bathe in the water, he helps them become liberated. Lord Jagannath is the Supreme Lord himself in the form of wood, and the river Ganges is the Supreme Lord himself in the form of water. There you are. And let's take a look, a glance at some of the holy rivers. This is Ganga at its origin. How many of you have been to the Himalayas? Okay. This is Yamuna at its origin near Yamunotri. This is Godavari and the Brahmagiri mountain at its origin. This is Saraswati near Badrinath in the Himalayas. This is Narmada in central India. This is the Sindhu that passes through the Karakoram range. This is the Kaveri River in South India. This is the Brahmaputra River in the northeastern part of India, Assam. This is the Krishna River again in South India, in Karnataka. This is the Mahanadi in the eastern Indian province of Odisha, near Jagannath Puri. This is the Tungabhadra, which is near Hampi. That's the place where Lord Ram resided for 4 months in the monsoon before he embarked on a search for Sita. Gandaki, this is in Nepal, starts in the mountains in Nepal, that's where you get the Shalagram Shilas, and then flows in and joins the Ganga. Even the very sight of these rivers is purifying. It is spiritual. So just looking at them, hearing their names, remembering them, glorifying them, wanting to visit them, desiring to do so, is also a cause of spiritual advancement. So Krishna is so kind that he gives us innumerable ways in which we can make spiritual advancement. Just imagine, thinking of rivers, you can go back to Godhead. Yes? Chandrabhaga in the western Indian state of Maharashtra and the land of Pandharpur. The Damodar River in eastern India. And by the way, some rivers have male names, are considered male, but a majority of them are feminine. They are female. So you have Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati, Narmada, Kaveri, etc., which are female. They have goddesses. And there are some, like the Brahmaputra. Brahmaputra, putra means son, the son of Brahma. Or you have the Damodar, for example. So they are male. And there are some rivers in peninsular India that flow eastward. Mostly they flow eastward, but some flow westward. So very interesting. Eastward rivers are like Godavari, Krishna, Kaveri. In the westward rivers are Narmada, Tapi, and so on. This is Payaswini River, Kerala. Mahaprabhu visited this also. Tapti River. Mahaprabhu visited all these places, whichever I am showing you. Tapti River, although I don't know, there's no record of Indus. Maybe he didn't go that far in the north. Yes, but otherwise he went to all the rivers of the Ganga Basin. He may not have gone to Nepal, but the Ganga Basin, the Gandaki, he may have crossed on the way back. The Tapti River again runs parallel to the Narmada in central India. The Koshi River, at its origin in Nepal, it's also called the Kaushiki. Many of these rivers are mentioned, actually all the rivers here are mentioned in the Puranas, in the Ramayana, in the Mahabharata, and so on. For example, this Kaushiki River is the one that is connected to Vishwamitra, who did penance here. Lord Ram also came here. the Saryu River at Ayodhya, it passed by the Ayodhya city of Lord Ramachandra. We'll talk about some of these rivers in the next few days, maybe in the last day or day after tomorrow. And now we'll talk about the River Ganga. So today we'll talk about Ganga, having had this brief introduction about rivers in general and the sacred rivers also. Now we'll particularly today focus on Ganga. Anyone knows what the word Ganga means? Everyone has heard of Ganga, right? What does the word mean, Ganga? Now, Ganga, it's composed of two words. To go, Gam, to go. So that which swiftly goes, which flows very swiftly, she is Ganga. So basically any river that swiftly flows can be called Ganga, but now the name Ganga has been given to this particular river. So there's no vacancy anymore for this name. No other river can be called the Ganga. Although in the scriptures there are other manifestations of Ganga, but because they are actually Ganga, non-different from Ganga, they can also be called Ganga, like the Godavari Ganga, for example. We'll come to that day after tomorrow, or maybe tomorrow. So the Ganga, of course, is the most famous, the most popular amongst all the sacred rivers of the world, not just of India, and is the most often described in the Vedic scriptures like the Puranas and the Itihasas. It's quite long. It's more than 2,500 kilometers long from the place where it starts in Gangotri in the Himalayas, and it goes all the way, it empties into the Bay of Bengal. Here you can see these rivers here, the Ganga river system, and it moves in a southeasterly direction and then empties into the Bay of Bengal. In terms of water discharge, it's the second greatest river in the world. The longest river is probably the Nile, and the greatest in terms of discharge is probably the Amazon, if my memory serves me right. But in terms, the Ganga is greatest in terms of its spiritual value, but also in terms of the discharge, the volume of water that it carries forward, is the second largest after the Amazon. And the basin of the Ganga, that includes the whole Ganga river system with all its tributaries, do you know how many people live in the Ganga basin? Just from the beginning to the end of the Ganga, including its tributaries. Do you know how many people are nourished by the Ganga basin? Any guesses? Any guess? 600 million. Actually, you're pretty close. It's 400 million. 400 million. Can you imagine? So even from a material point of view, it just makes no sense to not take care of Ganga. Unfortunately, today Ganga is in bad shape, as are all our rivers, and we'll talk about it briefly a little later. There are many important cities along the way. Prabhupada also makes that a point in his purports to mention. You have, for example, Agra, which is on the Yamuna, Delhi on the Yamuna, and then you have Lucknow, you have Kanpur, you have Varanasi, Allahabad, Patna, Calcutta, many, many important places along the way. And it has many tributaries. As Ganga flows from the Himalayas towards the sea, on her right, there are some like the Tamasa. There is Yamuna, which join her. There is the Son River. You can see these rivers on the map? The Son, Tamasa. Tamasa is where Valmiki Muni's ashram was, where Sita lived with her two sons, Lav and Kush. And where Lord Ram also came, he met Valmiki Muni over here. So Tamasa, Son, Yamuna, they all join Ganga from the right side as the Ganga flows from the Himalayas towards the sea. And on her left, as she flows downwards, you have many, many other tributaries that come in. you know, like the Gomati, Sarayu, Gandaki, the Kaushiki, and so on. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur says that in Kali Yuga, Krishna manifests himself in four forms. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Tulsi, Vaishnavas, and Ganga. You see, the deity, you may say, well, what about the deity? You see, the deity has to be installed before it becomes a deity. Before that, it's not considered a deity. But these four, from the very moment they appear, they are worshipable. So which are they again? Srimad Bhagavatam, Tulsi, the devotees, and Ganga. And we also heard the other quote from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu where he says that he says that he's non-different. Krishna manifests in wood as Lord Jagannath and he manifests in water as Ganga. So this is the importance or the spiritual significance of the Ganga. So let's talk about some more geography. Have any of you been to these places? This is called the Char Dham, the four dhams, Yamunotri, Gangotri, Kedarnath, Badrinath, high up in the Himalayas. A most exhilarating journey, if your health permits, but very risky. Now you may think, what kind of risk am I talking about? Yes, there is physical risk in the sense of there are landslides and buses do fall off the cliff and these things happen. In fact, we lost two of our brahmacharis many years ago in the 80s, and we never know, we didn't find them. They were going to Badrinath and the bus toppled over and fell down into the river and we never found them again. So that kind of risk is one thing, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the risk of you going there and then liking it so much that you won't want to come back. So there's a disclaimer now for this. So in all this encouragement, tomorrow please do not blame me when you go there and you don't want to come back here. So let's start with the Ganga. You see Ganga, you see the point called Devaprayag? Yes, in the map? What does the word Prayag mean, by the way? Even Allahabad is called Prayag, isn't it? Prayag means confluence. A confluence is a place where two or more rivers meet. So the most famous confluence is, of course, the place that is currently called Allahabad, which was traditionally called, historically, Prayagraj. King of confluences, where the Ganga, Saraswati and Yamuna meet. It's called the Triveni Sangam. Sangam means again a confluence. Veni refers to the three strands or the rivers. Three means three. So that's the most famous confluence. But next to that is Devaprayag. Because here you have two rivers that come and meet. On your left side, as you see, there is the river Bhagirathi. And on the right side in blue is the river Alakananda. So both these rivers meet at Devaprayag, and it is only after Devaprayag that the river is called officially Ganga. So both these, Bhagirathi as well as Alakananda, are the two chief head streams of Ganga. Now a little bit of geography once again, terminology for a river. What is the source of a river called? It's the source. The water that comes from that is called the headwaters. The source of a river is usually a glacier or a lake or some springs that come out into the hills and they come by precipitation of the snowfall and so many things. So usually it's up in the mountains. So there is a source, and the water that rushes out from the source is the headwaters. The headwaters, they form small rivulets called rills. Many rills join together to make brooks. Many brooks join together to make streams. And many streams join together to make a river. And then these rivers, they come together and join a main river. They become the tributary for that river. So therefore, you could say that Bhagirathi and Alaknanda are the two head streams of the Ganga. But even though the Alaknanda supplies much more water to the Ganga in terms of quantity than does the Bhagirathi river, still, from a spiritual point of view, from the scriptural point of view, the Bhagirathi is considered the original Ganga. And the Alaknanda is considered a tributary which meets Bhagirathi at Devaprayag. So Bhagirathi is also called Bhagirathi Ganga. Why it's called Bhagirathi, we'll see shortly. So the Bhagirathi Ganga starts from Gangotri. Okay, so we'll come back to this map as we go on. This is very interesting. And it's an unforgettable experience. It's an experience of a lifetime, I can assure you. So I would urge all of you, the one time, whenever is feasible for all of you, to visit these places. These four you call the Char Dham Yatra. You've heard of this phrase? Char Dham Yatra. Char means four. The four dhams, Yamunotri, Gangotri, Kedarnath, Badrinath. I haven't been to Kedarnath, but the other three I have been. Actually, the last time we went to Badrinath and Gangotri, Yamunotri was in 2012, October. And in 2013, there was a huge catastrophe in Kedarnath. You may remember that. There was a cloud burst. You know what a cloud burst is? It's the mother of all rainfalls, you know, gigantic, huge. If you think an ordinary downpour or a storm is terrible, a cloud burst is when the cloud literally just bursts. And the millions of tons of water that it holds just fall down, push, like that. And they swept away the whole river and all the embankments and the structures on the bank of the Alaknanda, of the Mandakini, sorry, which is, again, a tributary of the Alaknanda. Enormous damage. Surprisingly, the temple of Kedarnath wasn't harmed. And so that happened just a few months after we went there in 2012. We were a very large group. It was about October, but the temperatures in Badrinath went down to -5. And there's no heating there. Even the hot water for bathing, by the time in your guest house, that man brings it up in the bucket because they heat it on the fire, and then he comes up, and by the time he brings it up, it's cold. And many of the ladies were actually crying loudly because they just couldn't take it. You know, they had come from South India with some, you know, they thought, we told them it's cold, but they thought cold, you know, they had never experienced anything like this. South India, you know, 25 is cold, you know. And here -5, it was just too much. So anyway, so Gangotri is the place where, is the headwaters, is the source of the Ganga. So these tributaries, they flow like that and they join at Devaprayag. So let's just consider and look at Gangotri. Gangotri is a general source of the Ganga. You see, earlier, the Ganga actually used to originate from Gangotri. But because of the advance of Kali Yuga and so much sinful activity going on, the source has receded to as much as 18 kilometers behind. So there is a place near the glacier, the Gangotri glacier, called Gaumukh. The mouth of the cow, literally, or the mouth of the earth. Go can also mean earth. So it comes from there. And so it is said, let's look at some pictures. This is again the whole basin, we won't go. So this is the Gomukh, Gangotri. That's the point inside from where it originates. Gomukh. So you can see how the land has become denuded there. Over the years, probably water has flown and it's washed away all the topsoil, probably. So much work needs to be done. Ganga at Gangotri. So when she flows, the Bhagirathi Ganga flows here, then she's... the flow is quite strong actually. It's a huge big rush of water. It's not like a small little stream that flows out. Even the water that flows out from Gomukh under the glacier, it's a huge glacier and you can hear it moving and cracking actually. It's a mighty glacier, but it's slowly moving and you can sometimes hear that. So the stream of the Ganga rushes out from underneath that glacier. And finally it comes at Gangotri. You know, it's said that when Ganga descended from the heavenly planets to earth, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, to break her fall, Lord Shiva agreed to be the person to halt the flow. And the Ganga descended on his head, and from his head she diverged into many parts. And the main part cascaded into an area of Gomukh, into this area, and formed the Bhagirathi. So when the Ganga hit the earth, the altitude was so high that her waters froze and formed the glacier. So at the source of the Ganga then, there is a glacier. So here are some more sites of Ganga at Gangotri. You can go up to Gangotri, but from Gangotri to go up to Gomukh, it's rather difficult. It takes maybe a day or maybe 2 days to reach there trekking. And many do it. Many, many people do it. To see the power of faith, you have to go there. And there are many others who do it not out of faith, but they're just adventure lovers and they do trekking and so on. So they also do it. So this is as far as the Bhagirathi is concerned. That comes from the Gomukh in the Gangotri and comes to Devaprayag. So let's talk about the other river, Alakananda. Remember this river? Yes, the blue river, Alakananda. Now the Alakananda river starts from somewhere near Badrinath. Okay. And there is also a glacier there. It's called Satopanth Glacier. And there's another one called Bhagirath Khadak Glacier. So the Alakananda starts from those glaciers. It's very close to Badrinath. The waters come, they meet another river there called Man, and then they flow down past Badrinath. And as they flow down, there's another river called Dhauli Ganga that meets the Alakananda at the first confluence, at the first Prayag. That's called Vishnu Prayag. So as she flows past, as Alakananda flows past Badrinath, she also flows past Joshimath. Joshimath is a place also very holy. There's a temple of Lord Narasimhadev there. Unique, because Lord Narasimhadev is sitting here. And he's sitting and he's leaning like that. And he's made of stone. And his arm is extremely slim. And it is said that the arm was not always slim. It is becoming slimmer by the day. And a time will come when it will become so slim that it will snap. And when that happens, then the path upwards to Badrinath will be blocked. And Badrinath and the places above will be inaccessible to human beings. Progressively, as Kali Yuga progresses, as moves on, the higher reaches of even the visible material world become more and more inaccessible. So this will probably happen sometime way into Kali Yuga. So that Narasimha temple is at Joshimath. So the Alakananda flows down past Badrinath, past Joshimath, and comes to Vishnu Prayag. And that is about 4,000 feet high, the altitude. And the river is called Dhauli Ganga. Then the Alakananda flows down to the second confluence. And the river that meets it here is called the Nandakini. Nandakini is said to be the place where at one time when Lord Shiva was with Parvati Devi, she was thirsty. So he struck his trident into the nearby mountain, which is called Mount Trishul. And from there emerged these cool, sweet waters. You know, so they're called the Nandakini. And then she comes, she flows, and she joins the Alakananda here. It is the only confluence that doesn't have a temple at the confluence. Otherwise, all the confluences have temples built, usually to Lord Vishnu there. So she flows on. Then the third confluence is called Karna Prayag, where another river called the Pindar Ganga joins her. And it's named after Karna, because it is said Karna, the eldest son of Kunti, came here to do meditation somehow. And the Pindar, he forced the Pindar to come and join the Alakananda because he wanted to meditate at a confluence. Now, we don't have that kind of power. Of course, nowadays they are talking about connecting rivers and all that, but those are ecologically very risky, fraught with all sorts of risky consequences. So anyway, that is Karna Prayag. And then as you go on, you get the fourth Prayag or confluence, which is the confluence of the Mandakini River with Rudra, with Alakananda. And here also, it is the Mandakini starts from Kedarnath, the place of Lord Shiva. Kedarnath is Lord Shiva, Badrinath is Lord Vishnu. So, interesting here, Rudra Prayag is the place, it's got its name because of Lord Shiva again. It is at this place that Lord Shiva composed the ragas of classical music. It is said that Indian classical music originated at Rudra Prayag. And because Lord Shiva created these ragas here, so this is called Rudra Prayag after him. And then finally, you have Deva Prayag, where Alakananda now, which is her volumes have increased substantially because of all these rivers that have joined her, and she meets Bhagirathi Ganga at Deva Prayag. Bhagirathi also has many smaller tributaries that join her. And then at Deva Prayag, there is a grand confluence. I'll be showing you these pictures. Deva Prayag, as I mentioned, is the second most important confluence. And it is the place where Ram and Lakshman came, it is said, to perform austerities after killing Ravana, because after all, Ravana was a Brahmana too. And Lord Vamanadeva also came here to perform austerities. All these five confluences are mentioned in the Puranas. And the muddy water of the Alakananda, and you can see that, meets the clean, greenish water of the Bhagirathi over here. So let's see some pictures now. Yeah, this is the first confluence, Vishnu Prayag, the confluence of the Alakananda and the Dhauli Ganga. See the temple there? Every confluence you'll find some temple. Then there is Nanda Prayag, which is the confluence of the Alakananda and the Nandakini. Here is the Karna Prayag, which is the confluence of the Alakananda and the Pindar Ganga. Then Rudra Prayag, the confluence of the Alakananda and the Mandakini. And finally, the Deva Prayag, which is the confluence of the Alakananda and the Bhagirathi. And then the Ganga, now she's officially called Ganga. She flows down and comes into Rishikesh. Again, a very important place. Prabhupada went there in 1977 in May, just a few months before his disappearance from this world. He was in Bombay, but it was too hot in the month of May. So the devotees suggested going to Rishikesh. So then he went to Rishikesh and stayed there for some time. He spoke about the glories of the Ganga. But then eventually, when he realized that he didn't have much time left, he wanted to go to Vrindavan and leave this world from Vrindavan. So he left. So Rishikesh is a very important holy place. And then we come to Haridwar. As the Ganga flows down, the word Haridwar indicates that it is the gate to the land of Hari. Hari or Krishna. Dwar means gate. And this is the place where the Ganga meets the plains. till Haridwar, the Ganga was flowing downwards rapidly down the mountain slopes. And now the plains, the fertile plains begin from Haridwar. And there are many pastime places at Haridwar. There's a lot to speak about this actually. You can actually have a four-day session only on Ganga. You can have a four-day session only on Yamuna. You know, there's so much about the river, about the different tributaries, about the pastimes that have taken place along the banks, the holy places there. There's so much to discuss about each of them. And Haridwar also is a nice place, a really nice. The Ganga flows here. You can't help but be spiritual when you are at these places. It flows down, comes to Varanasi, Kashi, in the plains. Goes on to Allahabad, Triveni Sangam, Prayagraj, the confluence of the Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati. Passes Mayapur. Of course, you have a distributary of the Ganga called the Jalangi that flows past near our temple. And further on is the Ganga. It's in some distance away. So the Ganga flows there as well. And then, somehow this Triveni Sangam thing came here. It should have been before Mayapur anyway. So Triveni Sangam, you see the waters meeting? See the difference in the color? The two rivers meeting? Yamuna is dark. Ganga Sagar, finally, this is the mouth of the river, to use a geographical term. And it forms a delta there, because the sediment that it is, the silt that it has carried through, it deposits it, because the speed of the river slows down at the mouth. The speed is the slowest here. And so then, because of the slow speed, the silt settles, you form deltas. So the whole coast of Bangladesh and Bengal is one huge delta. In Bangladesh, of course, you have the Brahmaputra and it meets the Ganga. So the Ganga moves on from Bengal and goes into Bangladesh. It meets the Brahmaputra and then empties out into the Bay of Bengal. And here you have the Ganga going past Calcutta, which is called the Hooghly, and then moves on into the Bay of Bengal. So where the Ganga meets the Bay of Bengal in India is called Ganga Sagar. And festivities take place there in the month of Magh, the January, December, January. This is the place Kapiladev also lived. So much for the geography. But it's interesting, I thought, I was deliberating with how much I should speak about all this, but I think it's important so that the next time you go, you know where to go, what are the important places, and so on. Here is Goddess Ganga. You know, in Vedic, in the Vedic scriptures, we see that everything is personal. Everything happens because of a person. The whole creation happens because of a person. And even within the creation, everything has a person behind it who has been empowered by the Supreme Lord. Nothing happens without a person behind it. For example, you say government. The government has done this. Now the word government is a very impersonal word. But behind this impersonal word, there are people. There are ministers. There's a president or a queen or king or whatever. And even within the government, there's the minister. He doesn't do everything himself or herself. There are ministries. Within each ministry, there are people. There are departments in each ministry. There are people. So similarly, the whole creation behind that is the Supreme Lord. And he distributes various functions to various appointed representatives. So for every planet, there's a demigod. So for all the major rivers, there are demigods, demigoddesses. Then for the different hills and mountains, etc. So everything is personal here. So also there is a deity, there is a goddess Ganga. And this is the famous picture, the pose of Ganga. Actually, she has a carrier called the Makara. Makara is like a shark, kind of an aquatic, like a crocodile or a shark. And this shark is also, this crocodile is also white in color. And its mouth is open and it represents destruction as well as redemption. It can do both. And Mother Ganga is white complexioned. And she has four arms. And the two lower arms are in the two mudras of Abhaya and Varada. This is Abhaya. Abhaya means to grant fearlessness. And this is Varada, means granting benedictions. So when the palm is turned downwards, it's granting benedictions. When it's upwards, it's granting fearlessness. So her two lower arms are bestowing benedictions and fearlessness. In the upper two arms, she has a lotus as well as a pot. And these are mentioned in the various Puranas, like the Agni Puran and many, many other Puranas. She's also very well decorated. She has garlands and so on. Extremely beautiful. All the demigoddesses are naturally extremely beautiful also. So what is the identity of this Ganga Devi? Who is she? Who is this goddess? There are numerous descriptions in the various Vedic scriptures, and they all give different accounts, sometimes similar accounts, but sometimes different accounts. And the reason for this is that these accounts pertain perhaps to yugas or to days of Brahma in the past. So there is what is called the Kalpa Bheda. Bheda means difference. Kalpa means the day of Brahma. So there is a regularity and a schedule in which these things happen. There is a kind of repetition of these pastimes, but there's also variation in them. So the next time those personalities or those events happen, then they may happen slightly differently. So in any case, this goddess Ganga is actually Devakulya. And Brahma, the genealogy is that Brahma had a son, among many others, called Kardama. And Kardama was married to Devahuti, who was the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. And they had, among others, a daughter called Kala, who married Marichi, who had a son called Purnima. And one of the daughters of Purnima is Devakulya. And she is the presiding deity of the Ganga. Now, interestingly, the Narad Puran explains that Srimati Radharani expands as Lakshmi, Saraswati, Savitri, and Ganga in the spiritual world. So Ganga ultimately is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. And it is also mentioned that in Goloka Vrindavan, Ganga exists as a manjari. Vara Prema Manjari. Very interesting. How many of you knew that? That Ganga Devi in Goloka Vrindavan is a manjari. Yeah? Vara Prema Manjari. And she's one of the three eternal consorts of the Lord in Vaikuntha, the other two being Lakshmi and Saraswati. In Dwarka, Yamuna is present as who? Kalindi. That's another of Yamuna's names. And Ganga is present as who? Which queen? Mitravinda. So just as Yamuna has appeared in Dwarka Leela as Kalindi, Ganga has appeared in Dwarka Leela as Mitravinda. She is also the elder sister of Uma or Parvati. Both are the daughters of Himavan, the Himalayas. She is also Shiva's beloved wife. She is the sister of Yamuna. Yamuna and Ganga always come together. She is also known as Bhagirathi because King Bhagirath brought her to earth. She is known as Janavi because at one point, as Ganga was flowing impetuously towards the sea, she swept into the ashram of Jahnu Rishi, who was in meditation, and he saw his whole ashram getting swept away. He got annoyed, and he drunk in through his mystic powers the whole Ganga. And then King Bhagirath was, riding the chariot to take the Ganga to the ashes of his ancestors. And he saw, this is disaster. What happened? Where has Ganga disappeared? So he came to to the sage Janu, and on behalf of Ganga begged forgiveness and explained his predicament. Very mercifully, Janu released Ganga, but from his ear. And therefore, Ganga is also called the daughter of sage Janu. So she's called Jahnavi. That's the reason for the name Jahnavi. And she's also, of course, we know from the Mahabharata, the wife of Shantanu and the mother of Bhishma. As a demigoddess, there was a pastime and she was cursed to appear on earth. And the reason was that she had to bring forth into this world Bhishma. In the Gauda Ganudesha Deepika, it is mentioned that Ganga Devi also appeared as the daughter of Nityananda Prabhu, as Ganga, Ganga Devi, Ganga Mata Goswamini. Her husband was Madhava, who was the King Shantanu of the Mahabharata era. She is also called the wife of the ocean. So much about the identity of Ganga. So the next time we know who we are talking about. Now let's talk about the descent of Ganga into the universe. I'm sure you're all familiar with this pastime. Lord Vamanadev, the dwarf incarnation of the Lord, is seen there resplendent with a halo. And here is King Bali. So Vamanadev came into the assembly of King Bali and asked for 3 steps of land in charity. Bali Maharaj mocked him and said that you're not very intelligent. You've come to the king of the universe. You should be asking something grand, like a planet or something like that. Or at least some wealth, or at least ask for a wife or something like that. But you're asking for 3 steps of land and you're a dwarf. And Vamanadev said, I'm satisfied with this. So he took his first step. He expanded, he grew and grew and grew. He covered the earth planet and the higher planets in one step. In the second step, he actually covered the whole universe, and his toe, nail, pierced through the coverings of the universe. And the waters of the causal ocean, the Karana Sagar or the river Viraja, which is the boundary between the spiritual and material worlds, came in. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, it was just a drop, or maybe a few drops of the causal ocean that came in. But for us, it's like a huge flood. Just imagine, what's a drop for us? What is it to an ant? It may be a small puddle for us, right? Just a few drops of water, a teaspoonful, put it there. But what is it for an ant? And if you have a bucket full of water, for you it's just a bucket. But what is it for an ant? Yeah, so the causal ocean is so massive. Mahavishnu lies there. He's also so huge. So therefore, it's not surprising that in Chaitanya Charitamrita we hear that is just a drop or a few drops entered in. And it is said it was the left foot. Here somehow it shows the right foot. But maybe it's the picture turned around the other way. You know, when you look like that. But actually it's the left foot. And I guess you can give some artistic license. Because the Lord is absolute, so there's no difference between the right and the left for the Lord. So we can console ourselves for these little things. And there is reddish powder on the lotus feet of the Lord that has been offered, the saffron and everything offered. So when the Lord pierced the coverings of the universe, the water that came in also became slightly reddish. And she became known as Vishnupadi. Vishnupadi because she originated from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu or Lord Vamana. She's also called Vishnupadi because she can enable us to obtain the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Now the water entered in, right? It came into the ocean, into the material world. And as it entered the universe, Lord Shiva held it for 1,000 millenniums on his head. Now when he came on earth, he held it again. That's the second story. But even before they descended into the heavenly planets, Lord Shiva, in his gigantic form, held the Ganga, the water that had come in through from the causal ocean, on his head for 1,000 millennia. And then from there, he released the water. It came to the highest planet in the universe, which is not Brahmaloka, which is Dhruvaloka, the planet of Dhruva, because that is the place of Lord Vishnu. It is a Vaikuntha planet in the material world. So it came there, and Dhruva Maharaj accepted this water, knowing it to be the water that had washed the lotus feet of the Lord, Charanamrita. Charana means feet, Amrita means nectar. So very respectfully and devotedly, he accepted this water on his head. And to this day, he is holding it like that. Dhruva Maharaj is a great devotee, and because of his constant remembrance of the Lord, he's always experiencing ecstatic symptoms over there. So Dhruva Loka is also called Vishnupada, because the higher planets of the universe are said to be seated on the lotus feet of the Lord. So therefore Dhruva Loka was the place where it landed, where she landed, Ganga. And then from there she came to the next higher planet, which is a Saptarshi Loka, which is the planet of the seven sages. The seven sages also kept this water on the tufts of their hair, knowing this water to be very, very precious. They considered the water of the Ganga to be their ultimate wealth, the perfection of their austerities, and the best transcendental practice. And these sages accept devotional service as the perfection of their life. After that, the water, interestingly enough, was carried away by billions of celestial airplanes through these skyways, through the spaceways. And then it eventually came to Chandraloka, the moon. From there it came to Brahma's abode, Brahmaloka, on top of Mount Meru. Now, as the Ganga descended on Mount Meru, she branched out, she divided into four branches, and all these branches went off in different directions. And that's how Ganga came into the universe, but she remained on the higher planets. She didn't come down to the earth. She remained wandering in different places there. The four Kumaras also descended from Satyaloka, and they wandered throughout the universe. By flowing with the mystic power, they went into the Ganga and they flowed with the Ganga water. Srila Prabhupada mentions that yogis can enter into the Ganga at one end and come out the other. He talked about one yogi who would get into the Ganga at Rishikesh or Haridwar and he would come out at Calcutta. He would get into the flow and just, they had that mystic power. So the yogis of the earth planet are very small yogis compared to the four Kumaras and the residents of the higher planets, who are really something else. So they have the power to, by mystic yoga, go through the Akash Ganga, the celestial Ganga, the Milky Way. Those of you who like to do stargazing or who have some idea, you know the little belt of stars in the sky is called the Milky Way, the Akash Ganga. So the four Kumaras, they go through that. Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that there are five sacred rivers in India, Ganga, Yamuna, Narmada, Kaveri and Krishna, and all are celestial. Like Ganga, they flow in the higher planets. And at some point then they're brought down here. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very interesting comment. He says that the Ganga that we have here is a combination of three waters. The first is the water that entered into the universe with this pastime of Lord Vamanadev piercing the covering of the universe. The second is when Brahma washed the lotus feet of Vamanadev. After he had taken his first step, Brahma very respectfully used the water from his kamandalu or his water pot, washed it, and that also became the Ganga. And the third, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is that the water of the Ganga is Lord Narayan himself. So we have seen that earlier also, some scriptural references that the Lord himself becomes Ganga. So the higher planets, Ganga is known as Mandakini. On the earth, she is known as Ganga. And in the lower planets, she is known as Bhogavati. So she flows now. Initially, she was only in the higher planets. And because of Bhagirath, she came to the earth planet and also she went to the lower planets. So now she traverses all three divisions of the universe, the upper, the middle, and the lower. Therefore, she is called Tripathiga. She who goes through, travels through all the three divisions of the universe. And she's the only river who goes through the entire universe. So the analogy is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam about how Krishna Katha is like the Ganga. Just as the Ganga purifies the three worlds within the universe because she passes, so Krishna Katha purifies the speaker, the listener, and the questioner. So once the Ganga had entered into the higher planets, then we had an interesting pastime. Now, we're not going to be able to finish. I'll need another 10, 15 minutes. But what do you suggest? I'll continue when the curtain opens. Yes? Okay. So now, those of you who have read the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know about this pastime. And this pastime, actually the pastimes of the descent of the Ganga into the universe are innumerable. There are references in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9. There are also references, detailed descriptions in the Valmiki Ramayana, in the Mahabharata, in the Brahmanda Purana, the Markandeya Purana, and several other Puranas. And all these descriptions vary with each other, you know, sometimes substantially even. So one can understand that to be the Kalpa Bheda. So anyway, coming here to this pastime, there was a very powerful king called Sagar. Not Sagar, Sagar. Okay, we will welcome the Lord first. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So we'll continue discussion on the Ganga, knowing that their lordships, the Ganga is very dear to their lordships. So we hope that they will pardon us for continuing this discussion. So, King Sagar was a great king. Actually, I think we'll continue this tomorrow because it'll cause too much disturbance and we can peacefully hear it tomorrow. What do you think? And some of you also a little hurry to go home, a little hungry as well. It's 9 o'clock, I think. So we'll stop here today. We'll take 10 minutes tomorrow to discuss the remaining portion. It's interesting how Ganga is in Golok Vrindavan also. We'll come to that. And then tomorrow we'll talk about Yamuna. We'll discuss a little more of Ganga and then Yamuna. So we'll stop here. Ganga Maya ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna. Thank you.